Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 402 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. That is the truth. Yeah, there's a few mad fights to revisit in the review part of the show. Let's dive straight in. We're going to start here at the Ota City General Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan. Really strange main event, which we'll get to in just a sec. But I do want to touch on the undercard. Daigo Higa now 20-2 with a draw, a knockout for him in round four against Sirachai Taien, who is now 65-5. Yeah, Daigo Higa, you could almost double your money just for him to get a stoppage, which I thought was a bit mad. Those odds, like, he does hit like a, you know, like a train. But, obviously, his best days are definitely in the past, but he was able to obliterate Taien there. I think he had him down three or four times before the stoppage. And, yeah, the main event, Joshua Franco, obviously the brother of Bam Rodriguez, such a bizarre one. It was a rematch between him and Kazuto Ioka. Joshua Franco now 18-2 with three draws. He loses by unanimous decision over 12 rounds to Ioka, who's now 30-2 with a draw. Joshua Franco, like I say, is the king of rematches usually. Comes back and beats a guy again. I think he boxed Oscar Negrete three times, boxed Andrew Maloney three times, and has here boxed Ioka twice. And yeah, he lost, but not just because of the fight. He actually lost his WBA World Super Flyweight title on the scales, Eddie. Joshua Franco coming in over 6 pounds over the weight. I'm not entirely sure what happened. It was just a shocking headline to see that he'd lost his title on the scales. I thought he would lose the first fight with Ioka, but actually he was a hell of a lot better than I thought he... Not that he was, but I thought that he'd struggle with Ioka. I thought Ioka would win. It's in Japan. But Franco, from what a lot of people said, deserved the victory, but obviously it ended up being a draw. And he came back here, lost his title on the scales. I expected him to, you know, probably win the fight, but yeah, he loses unanimously. He didn't put in a good performance, and off the back of that has decided to retire at just 27 years of age. And he's claiming that he's been battling severe mental health issues for years. So it's a really sad situation, actually, because this is a guy who's only 27, obviously in his prime years, you know, world champion, one of the best in the world, that's what that means, and then he is at the very top of the sport, getting paid, big paydays, but he's deciding to walk away and leave it there. I'm hoping that he can go away and deal with these mental issues that, you know, I feel like everyone at some point in their life has suffered with. I'm suffering with him right now. You know, I don't know what Franco's going through, but I sympathize with him because it must be serious enough for him to walk away from this sport. And apparently he's been battling it for years and has tried to put it to the back of his mind to be able to put on big performances and good performances for the fans and stuff. So if he was able to do that, I'm hoping he can do that again, because obviously he still has a very bright future if he decides to continue. But I sympathize with Joshua Franco, and I send him best wishes and prayers, and hope he can get through this, because it'll be a real sad shame if this is the end and we never see him fight again. Only 22 fights into his career, and he's been in some really good ones, and it's a real shame. I think there was many more big nights to come from him. But anyway, moving now to the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA. It was live on Showtime. A very, very, very poor performance from former IBF super middleweight world champion Caleb Truax. He returned to the ring after about 28 months out. He's now 31-6 with two draws. He lost unanimously over 10 rounds to the relatively unknown Burley Brooks, who was 6-2 with a draw, now 7-2 with a draw. Caleb Truax looked absolutely awful. He cost me almost every single bet because I thought he would, you know, win this fight easily, even though he moved up to light heavy for it. This is a completely unknown guy. Caleb's a former world champion. I know he's about 39 or whatever, but I didn't think he was that far gone that he would struggle over 10 rounds. I thought that, you know, in the later rounds, surely the experience would tell. And it did in some moments, but still, he probably lost about 8 out of the 10 rounds. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, he needs to retire if he hasn't already. That was such a bad performance. Moving up the card once again, Erickson Lubin with the TKO round 5. He's now 25-2, a TKO against Luis Arias. He becomes the first man to stop Arias. Arias is now 20-4 with a draw. Yeah, a lot of people really, really mad with the stoppage because Luis Arias, I think, maybe got up at 8 or got up at 9 and the referee waved it off, so it was a little bit premature. But a lot of people were saying, you know, Lubin did pretty much dominate every single round up till that point, so what was the point of carrying on? That's not always how boxing is, especially that early in a fight. We hadn't even seen the first half of it. For all we knew, Arias could have come back and won the rest of the rounds and he would have, you know, been in with a shout of winning the fight. So, yeah, I thought Erickson Lubin would win that on points, like many people did, and I see a couple people went with the knockout, which I think was quite a ballsy pick, but it did come through. And then, yeah, the main event, Carlos Adames, now 23-1, a TKO victory in round 9 against Julian J-Rock Williams, now 28-4 with a draw. It's what I expected. I expected Adames to get to him at some point and knock him out. It was for the WBC Interim World Middleweight title. Adames started the fight quite well, you know, put some good punches together. Williams took them quite well, actually. I was quite impressed with his punch resistance early on. And then, yeah, he dealt with a few of those big shots and came back with his own. And he had a few decent rounds, actually, probably around about round 2, 3, and 4. They were quite good rounds for Williams. I'm not entirely sure he won all of them, all of those three there, but yeah, he had a lot of success, and Adames obviously weathered the storm, took the punches quite well, ended up coming back in the second half of the fight and dominating it. And I thought Adames, even at that point, I put a bet on in play. I thought Adames is going to get the stoppage in either round, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I didn't think J-Rock would be able to go 12. He'd taken a lot of body shots. He looked hurt a number of times in the second half of the fight, and I thought that the end would be near. The stoppage wasn't as, I guess, clear-cut as many people would have liked it to have been, particularly Julian Williams' trainer, Breadman, Stephen, I think his name's Stephen Edwards. He was fuming. He was going crazy at the referee. But yeah, I mean, for me, Adames was firmly in control and would have got the stoppage anyway. If it wasn't that round, it would have probably been the round after that. Williams was in a lot of trouble. And yeah, I think he did quite well, actually, to go 9 rounds with Adames. I was expecting Adames maybe to get Williams out within 6, actually, because I think Williams is really shot. But to me, he seemed like he had something left. And once again, Breadman did say, and he kind of, he was so fueled on emotions, but in the post-fight interview in the ring, he was saying this might be J-Rock's last fight, and I don't think J-Rock was particularly happy that he divulged that information. But I think, yeah, they basically said, yeah, we wanted to kind of give it one last roll of the dice, and this wasn't a satisfactory ending. So J-Rock went on social media the next day and basically said, look, I feel gutted. Like, it's just not fair. I just wanted a fair shake. I don't think the stoppage was that bad, in all honesty. Like, I don't know if that's controversial or whatever, but I didn't think it was that bad. Like I say, I'm very confident, I felt, that Adames would get him out anyway. That's why I put on a bet just a few minutes before. So, yeah, I mean, I think Adames was going to win. I think he'd already won on my scorecard, and It's a shame for J-Rock. I would have liked to seen him win. He's a friend of the show. He was on once or twice in the past. But yeah, if that's it for him, that's it. But maybe he can come back and get another win just before he sails off. Moving now to the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, USA. Again, I don't know if you saw anything at all, Eddie, but if there's anything you want to jump in with, then you can. But on this card over here, we saw Reshat Matti move to 14-0, a TKO for him in round 9 against Dakota Linga, now 13-6 with 3 draws. Do you know, I can't remember watching all of that fight. I'm not entirely sure I did watch all of that fight, but I expected Matti to get a stoppage at some point, and I'm kind of glad that he did in the end. Moving up the card once again, Adam Kownacki, now 20-4. Friend of the show, Adam Kownacki, TKO'd in round 8. He was down, though, in round 1 against Joe Cusumano, who's now 22-4. Crazy fight. Kownacki showed a hell of a lot of heart. Obviously was coming off 3 losses in a row. I did say, and we said it, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, Eddie. But yeah, Kownacki down in the very first round. Cusumano obviously came out and I wouldn't say went looking for him, but came out, met him in the middle of the ring and was extremely confident in his own ability. You know, he was really throwing big shots, you know, stiff jabs coming over with the right hand, and his right hand looked like a real weapon. And after Eddie, you spoke before about seeing him spar with Big Bang, I kind of thought to myself, okay, this could be interesting. And drops Kownacki in the first round. Kownacki gets back to the corner, pretty much gets saved by the bell. He was absolutely hurt all over the place. He comes back in the second round, and before they let the second round begin, the referee lets the doctor come in and have a look at Kownacki, which bought Kownacki even more time. So Kownacki already had the minute between rounds and already had the 10 seconds after being knocked down. And then he gets about another 20 seconds here. So he probably had about a minute and a half to a minute and 40 seconds of recovery time without really taking a punch. He comes back and actually has a decent round, I think, in round 2. And he seemed to build off of that. He came back with a few good rounds. A few times in the fight, the commentary team were doing something quite interesting where they were kind of saying, I think there was 3 commentators. I'm not entirely sure who they were. I think Chris Mannix, Sergio Mora, and one other guy. I'm not sure who it was, actually. But anyway, they're talking and they're saying, who would you rather be right now at this point? And they were like, well, I'd rather be Cusumano. And then the other guy would go, well, I'd rather be Kownacki. And it was interesting because, you know, they clearly didn't know how the fight was going to pan out. And they were like, well, Kaunaki's got the experience here. And, you know, I'd rather be him now. It seems like his head's cleared. He's taking these shots that he was taking earlier on. He's taking them a lot better now, you know. And to a degree, that was true. Kownacki did start investing as well in the body of Cusumano, which, you know, seemed to bother Cusumano. Looked like he was hurt from a few body shots. Kownacki hit him with some big headshots as well. Some big headshots, actually, that I think would have put away some heavyweights. Cusumano showed a good chin. And yeah, it was just a crazy fight, man. I don't think Kaunaki's output was as high as it had previously been in other fights, of course. But that's not really anything to write home about. That's to be expected. I think that fight with Areola, he threw about 10 million punches. But anyway, he came back, had a few good rounds, looked like at times he might even be able to stop Cusumano. And then I think it was at the end of round 6 or 7 where Cusumano was punishing Kownacki, and then Kaunaki's team got up on the ropes with the white towel about to throw it in. Kownacki saw it, and all of a sudden it flicked a switch. He started coming back with combinations himself, and it was like, okay, he really does not want him to stop it. When he got back to the corner, they were talking about stopping it, and I think they even asked the family, if I'm not mistaken, of Kownacki, do you want us to stop this fight? To which the family said no. That's a bit bizarre. I'm not entirely sure I'm a fan of that. I don't think a trainer should be asking family. I think he should know his fighter good enough himself. It shouldn't be anything to do with, you know, people that are not participants of the sport. But anyways, Kownacki comes back out and ends up getting stopped in round 8. The towel did end up coming in. Cusumano started putting his shots together. His jab was really, really good all night long. I wasn't sure if it's just because he's got a good jab or if Kownacki just loves taking jabs in the face. We saw Kownacki make Robert Hellenius look like a prime Larry Holmes. Kownacki has to be finished. You know, surely that's the end of the road for him. unless he just wants to come back at real low level. You know, like, yeah, I mean, it's so bad that if you put him in with someone like Joey Abel, I wouldn't be confident that Kawanaki would be able to win that fight in this current moment. Good stuff for Joe Cusimano, deserves a big fight off the back of that. I'm not sure how big, though. There's a lot of guys in the queue. I don't think he should leapfrog anyone just because he beat Kawanaki in this particular form. But anyway, Eddie, the main part is that we said Joe Cusimano was worth a punt at 9-1. I bet on that myself for him to get the knockout at 9-1. Others did as well. And I think we were quite happy with that, because you agreed as well, said it's worth it. We both said it, and we've given the listeners a chance there to times their money by 9.
Yeah, that's a fact. That is a fact. Like I said, I seen him in there with Zhang a couple of times. And these were with big gloves on. He hit Zhang, and I'll just say he got his respect. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to say that, you know, anybody was getting beat up. I mean, we were doing multiple rounds with multiple different guys, you know, Zhang was, because it was his camp. But, he looked solid. He didn't look like he was just going to be a guy that was going to go in and make Kawanaki look good, honestly. So when you said, you know, maybe put in there possibly an opportunity for a knockout, I was like, look, after him losing 3 fights in a row and looking the way he did, there's definitely a good shot for Joe to go in there and take that win, possibly by knockout. So, and that's what I've, you know, he was, like I said, he seemed like he had a pretty good punch, like he could crack a little bit. So, yeah. And he was obviously, he didn't look slow. He didn't look like he was, you know, deficient in any way skill wise, you know, to the point where you could just say he doesn't belong at that level. So yeah, it was definitely a good bet. At least if you were gonna put some money on something and you thought, you know, it's worth a try, especially with the odds, absolutely a good bet. Definitely a good bet. So yeah, we're happy to have made some people a little bit richer betting on boxing last week.
Hopefully. And moving up to the main event, Edgar Belanga now 21-0, a unanimous decision against Jason Quigley. It went 12 rounds. Jason Quigley now 20-3. Quigley knocked down in the 3rd round, the 5th round, and then twice in the 12th and final round. By the 12th round, my stream had died, so I didn't actually see, I think, the last 2 or 3 rounds of the fight. It's just so crazy, and I keep saying it. You know, I have no idea how Belanga, when I look at him now, how he went through 16 guys in a row, all with knocking him out in one round. He's now gone the distance 5 times in a row. And, you know, I just want to look over that. Damond Nicholson is the first guy that took him the distance. When Belanga fought him, he had 3 losses. Only one was by stoppage, and it was to Jesse Hart. So I can say, okay, you know, Jesse Hart's a big enough puncher, and if you don't stop him, then okay, I guess, you know, he's a durable guy, really, Damond Nicholson. Then he gets in with Marcelo Esteban Caceres, a guy that has only been stopped 1 time, but it was to Billy Joe Saunders. I thought he's definitely going to knock this guy out because Billy Joe knocked him out. So Belanga comes and goes 10 with him. And I think that was the fight as well where Belanga was put down, which again was like, what the hell? Then he got in with Steve Rolls, who again, we'd only seen lose just 1 time, and it was to Gennady Golovkin, and he took him out in just 4 rounds. Belanga goes the distance with him. Then he gets in with Roma Alexis Angulo, who again had 2 losses, 1 by stoppage. It was to David Benavidez in round 10. Belanga goes the distance with him. He was durable. Then this one here, I think, is the worst of all. Gets in with Jason Quigley. Jason Quigley's 2 losses were both by knockout. He got knocked out by Demetrius Andrade in 2 rounds. He quit on his stall against Turiano Johnson in 9 rounds back in 2019. Literally, he's also a middleweight. He was moving up to super middleweight to fight Belanga. You know what I'm saying? And Belanga goes 12 with him. And that is the now in the coffin for me, that Belanga, something has changed. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a mindset thing. But, you know, this guy once upon a time was going around calling himself the monster. And, wow, it is crazy, this downfall. I've never known a downfall like it happen to a guy without losing a fight. You know, that's mad. But he has gone down so far in estimations now. Like, I saw a poll today on Twitter saying who would win out of him and John Ryder. 93% of people said John Ryder. You know, what has happened to Belanga? I do not know. I don't want to speculate or make any rumors circulate, but something is not the same as it was back in 2020 during COVID times and stuff when he was banging people out. Something has changed. Five times now he's gone the distance. Credit to Jason Quigley, friend of the show. Like I say, showed his toughness. I didn't even think it. I thought he was there for the payday. I thought he was just going to take a few shots and go down. And when he was down in round three, I thought, okay, the end is near. And I just couldn't believe it. But again, I actually, believe it or not, I bet on that fight to go the distance. So I was quite happy with that. And I cannot tell you what made me bet on that, because I didn't think it would. But I did think it was worth the price. And I got paid off of that. But anyway, moving to the final card to mention. It took place at the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. Haven't seen it. But the result is that Tevin Farmer returned to the ring after... I think it was 3 years out of it, and or just over 3 years, I think it was. Or was it? I can't remember now. It might have been 2.5 years. Anyway, returned to the ring. He's now 31-5 with a draw. A unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Avery Sparrow, who's now 11-5. Farmer won on two cards by just 1 point. So it must have been a very close fight over 10 rounds there. And it took place just over the lightweight limit. Both guys 136 pounds and a few ounces. Anyway, that is it though for the review part of the show. It's now time for me to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the reigning WBC, WBO, IBF, and of course Ring Magazine female super welterweight world champion. It is of course Miss GB, Natasha Jonas. Tasha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. So, Tasha, first things first, welcome once again on. The pleasure's mine. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. Your pro career obviously has had its fair share of ups and downs. I remember right back, obviously, to the Obernor fight. Considering how you've bounced back from that and achieved what you've gone on to achieve is absolutely crazy. So congrats again on that. I want to start with this question here. Did you ever lose hope at any point? Did you ever maybe think you might not perhaps achieve a world title at some stage?
Yeah, I think the decision against Harper, the close talk, like the decision with Katie, it was easy to give up if you wanted to at any given point, even after the open off as well. But there was just something that kept eating away, saying that it can't end like that.
Yeah, and like you touched on there, I think you came very close in the Terry Harper fight. I think you came very close in the Katie Taylor fight. But yeah, talk me through that fateful night back in February of last year, that second round stoppage over Chris Namus, who'd only been stopped the one time, and it was over 12 years prior. And of course, you'd moved up from super feather right up to super welter in pretty much a space of about a year and a half, which is almost unheard of. But yeah, talk me through those epic two rounds, Tasha.
Not much to say. I think we'd worked on a game plan of just because of the size and the physicality, because they hadn't grew into the weight division at that time. It was just about don't let her settle and keep moving. I hit her with a backhand hook and I knew from then on that I could hurt her. And I think she still hadn't fully recovered by the time she escaped the first round because of and there was only a couple of seconds left in the round, but I think, you know, Joe was adamant that I should just jump on it. And when we got the stoppage, and I think the first emotion I felt was relief, and it was just a brilliant night. And obviously, it was topped as well by Karen Brook.
Yeah, absolutely. An unbelievable night, honestly. Obviously, you picked up the WBO that night. Then came that unification with Patricia Bergholt. A lot of people felt you might come unstuck there. I mean, she was undefeated. She beaten Hannah Rankin, but you managed to shut her out and take her WBC title. Maybe give me a couple words on that, Tasha. Another brilliant win.
Yeah, it was. I'd never actually fought her in the amateurs, but she was around in the amateurs when I was there. So I knew a bit of her style and how she boxed, and Sweden were always a good national team, so I knew her, like, she comes from good pedigree, and it was just about being smart and boxing smart.
And then, yeah, just briefly on your last fight, yet another belt, this time the IBF. You dominate Mary Eve Dekair over 10 rounds unanimously. Obviously, you'll know her one loss prior was to Clarissa Shields. Just talk me through that one as well. Another great win.
Yeah, I think Dekair was probably the toughest, with greatest of respect out of everyone because of her physicality. But I think she was banking a lot on that physicality and like I was, again, you know, we couldn't let her settle, and I knew I was going to have to hit her hard in order to gain her respect. But she kept on adapting, and then I asked her to adapt to her adapting, and it was just a good fight all around.
Yeah, credit to her. She obviously came to fight for sure, and it was a brilliant win for yourself. And Tasha, all three of those fights I've mentioned obviously all took place last year. Three fights in 2022, three wins, a new belt in each fight for yourself. For me, I felt you were the best female fighter in the world last year. I wanted to ask Tasha, how has this actually happened? I mean, should you have always been campaigning at 154, or despite not looking a day over 14 years of age, are you now in your prime of 39?
Yeah, oh gosh, I know. No, I mean, super feather was a struggle. So maybe lightweight, I should have been campaigning up, but it was just opportunity, I think. You know, Katie was tied up, Chantel was tied up, McCaskill was tied up. I knew I weren't going to ever do super feather again. So it was just, they was all tied up. So the only logical thing, and the opportunity became available because Clarissa vacated to go up and fight Savannah, was to do that fight. The boxer had managed to get, you know, pull it out the woodwork and get Namus sanctioned for it, so it just so happened that we could do it.
And I want to ask as well, can 2022 possibly be topped?
I mean, it was always going to be tough, but we're starting a bit late, which has been a bit frustrating. But fourth fight on the spin for another belt, I mean, that's a good way to start it off.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, let's talk about this upcoming fight. Obviously, you're boxing on Saturday at the Manchester Arena live on Sky Sports. You'll be moving down a weight, as you said, to welter to challenge Candy Wyatt for the vacant IBF title. What should fans expect to see from you? And also, is this move to 147, you know, just for the opportunity or more long term, do you think?
No, I do think it's a bit longer term. Like I say, I moved up to 154 for the opportunity, and now I think, you know, there's nothing there for me. And I know people are going to say, oh, there's 30, but I've made it quite clear about that fight. So, I just think that there's nothing there for me then to go down. And I do want to, it's hard because there's fights that, you know, I want. There's fights that are easier for Boxer to make. There's fights that the fans want to see. And then there's fights that Sky want to put on. So there has to be a happy medium. Like there has to be one we can all agree on. For me, obviously, I'm near at the end of my career, unfortunately. I just want them fights that I can, you know, when I do hang up the gloves eventually and be like, you know what, I fought everyone.
And how do you see this fight playing out as well?
Against Candy, I think she'll be coming to spoil the party. She's had a little bit of success against Kirsty Babington on New Year's, but like always, you know, I always prepare and put myself in the best physical condition, and I expect her to do the same. That's what I prepare for, is her very best.
And Tasha, Joe Gallagher, obviously your trainer, I saw a tiny little part of an interview he did the other day, and I think it was headlined by saying that personally he thinks you should retire after this fight, which is a really, really interesting view. Obviously, some would say that at 39 you're in your prime, you're fighting better than ever before. I wanted to just get your thoughts on that, because it's obviously quite unusual for a trainer to say that while you're still a reigning champion.
Yeah, I think for Joe, like, he was like, what do you want? And I was like, I want to be a champion, and then I can go off into the sunset. So then when we made that, when obviously against Namus, and we got that, he was like, right, okay, is this where you retire? And I was like, well, actually, now I feel like I could do more. You know, we had such a good camp and performed so well in that fight. I was like, if Ben can get me more opportunities, we'll take it. And then obviously Ben went away and did that. And then, you know, won the WBC and was like, okay, well, you know, if there's any more going, we'll have that. And it was just that's the case. And you know what? Now that I've proved to myself more than anyone else that, you know, I am an elite fighter and I was good enough to be a world title holder, that everything that comes on the back of that is a bonus for me. And I'm just enjoying the ride. And, you know, for a long time, I've had to fight my way to be in the position to be able to choose my options. I was always like hoping someone would pick me as their option, because I was a lot of risk and no reward, because I didn't have the belts. Now the comfort of the belts is that you can then choose who you want to fight, or at least you've got a bit of pull and a bit of say so. And I've you know, gone the long way around it, but I've got to that position. So I feel like, you know, I've got that, you know, I'm in that privileged position to be able to choose who I want to fight.
And Tasha, again, I don't want to bore you to death with the millionth and one question about Terry Harper. I understand you've been hit with so many, but obviously the first fight, or the only fight, was an absolutely unbelievable fight. And I haven't seen too many interviews. Obviously, I'm sure there's, you know, two sides to the story or whatever. But what is the situation, just in a nutshell, really simplified, why it doesn't seem like we're going to see that rematch?
The short end is that I believe that she avoided me for 2 years and didn't say my name, didn't want the rematch, went and fought a mandatory that their team went and requested. And, you know, I get it. When it comes to boxing as a business and choosing the right pathway for their boxers, I totally get it why she did that. But I went and had to, like I say, go the long way and forge my own way. So now that I'm in the position where I'm able to choose, why would I give her that option? She didn't give me the privilege of doing that. So, and I believe I've already beat her before.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a lot of people, more people thought you won than lost that fight. Okay, well, hypothetically, I'll say, at 154, do you feel like you do a much better job?
No, I do feel like if you look at the weigh-ins and what I've weighed in, I've never, ever been anywhere near 154. Yeah. I think the highest that I've weighed in with clothes on is 149. So I've never been a big 154, and my intentions was never to stay at 154. It's just that the opportunities kept on presenting themselves there. And like I said, now that I feel that they're not there for me, or there's nothing really there to keep me, then I will go down and, you know, like I say, there's fights that I want. And I have to put myself in positions to be able to get them fights.
And Tasha, without looking past Candy, obviously, what are those fights that you want, if you can name a couple for us?
Oh, I think there's no secret that I'd love to fight Katie again. And I believe, like I've been saying, Chantal's the best fighter that we've got, and I want to challenge myself against the best. So, you know, Chantal and Katie are two people. McCaskill, we've literally chased McCaskill for the last year. We wanted McCaskill as soon as we beat Namas, but for whatever reason, she went on and obviously again chose the best route for her, which I don't blame her, and got other fights, and now we tried before she went and signed this recent deal with Matchroom to do you know, Ben tried to sign it with a 3-fight deal and one of the fights would be me, and it didn't work out. She's gone and chose to go with Matchroom and fight Sandy. So I get it. That's just that. Sometimes that's just the way boxing is, and you've just got to roll with your opportunities as they present themselves.
No, for sure. And just finally, before I let you go, Tasha, I really appreciate your time. I'd just like to throw it over to you. If you've got any closing words just to the listeners, if you want to sign out with a message or say anything, absolutely anything you want before we let you go, the floor is yours.
Oh, right. Wow. yeah, just thanks for sticking with me. That's it. You know, all the people that said I couldn't and all the people that said I can both motivated me, and here I am. So, you know, thank you.
There we go. Listen, Tasha, it's been an absolute pleasure to finally get you on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Best of luck for Saturday night, and we'll speak sometime afterwards, I'm sure.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. And thanks for supporting me and, you know, supporting women's boxing.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show, but there is none to mention. So we move to the preview part. Let's start here at the Uni Hall Wuppertal in Nordrhein Westfalen, Germany, over here. One fight to mention for the vacant IBF World Middleweight title. We're going to see Vincenzo Gualtieri, 20-0 with one draw. He gets in with Esquiva Falcao, who's 30-0. It's a fight, obviously, I'm expecting Esquiva Falcao to win. I was particularly impressed with Falcao. I know that, obviously, he's been a pro a long time now, but I was quite impressed when he was able to get Akhavov out of there in just four rounds. Akhavov retired on his stool. I thought that was quite an impressive win, really, because Akhavov, you know, even to this day, he's got four losses, two by stoppage, but one of them was a ridiculous stoppage to Demetrius Andrade. It never should have been stopped. So I count this loss here to Falcao as really his only legitimate stoppage loss. So yeah, Falcao's a good fighter. He's been around for a long, long time. It seems like it's took a long time really for him to get a shot at a world title. He gets it. He's almost been a pro for 10 years. Gets in with this guy, Vincenzo Gualtieri, 20-0, like I say, with a draw. 7 KOs. Fantastically Italian name, but actually fights out of Germany. And yeah, I was looking through his record. I can't say I've actually seen much of him. I recognise a couple names on there at a push. So yeah, I couldn't tell you much about how the fight's going to go down, but it was worth mentioning. Moving now to the Manchester Arena in Manchester, Lancashire, United Kingdom. This one, of course, will be on Sky Sports this weekend on Saturday. Really, really, really looking forward to this entire card. Let's start with the undercard. We're going to see Callum Simpson, 11-0. He gets in with Boris Crichton. For me, this is pretty much just a measuring stick fight, really, because obviously we saw Boris Crichton get in with Lyndon Arthur on about 2 or 3 days' notice, and he didn't get knocked out, and people thought that Arthur would steamroll him. Since then, he's had actually two more fights. He boxed 2 weeks in a row in April. So after the Lyndon Arthur fight, he boxed 3 weeks later, got a points win against a guy who was 6-0. Then he got a points loss against a guy who was 17-1 with a draw. He gets back in with Callum Simpson, who, as we know, has got really heavy hands, 9 KOs in his 11 wins. Not sure how many rounds it is at the moment, but yeah, it should be a good fight, and Callum Simpson will definitely want to try to get Crichton out of there. Moving up the card once again, we're going to see Ben Whittaker in an 8-rounder here. He's 3-0. He gets in with Vladimir Belugsky, who's 13-6 with a draw. Belugsky coming off a win last time out against a guy who was 5-116-1. But prior to that, he'd been beaten three times in a row to Jack Cullen, Shaquille Finn, and Carol Itauma. Yeah, they're kind of saying this is a step up, but honestly, it's not. And Ben Whittaker, for me, will probably get him out of there. Also on the card, we spoke to her just a moment ago, Natasha Jonas, 13-2 with a draw, fighting Candy Wyatt, who's 11-4 for the IBF World Welterweight title, which is vacant. Natasha, obviously, moving down in weight. Attempting to become a two-weight world champion. I'm really excited for this fight. I hope she can do the job. And Zach Chelly as well on the card, 13-1 with a draw. He gets in with Mark Jeffers, who's 15-0. I haven't seen much of Mark Jeffers at all. I know that obviously Zach was initially supposed to be fighting someone else. I can't remember who it was supposed to be now, but it was really annoying when that fight fell out of bed. And in steps Mark Jeffers. So all the best to both guys there. Don't really care who wins. And yeah, the main event, Franchon Cruz-Dizern. I think we had her on couple weeks ago now. She defends all of her belts. She's the undisputed super middleweight world champion, IBF, WBA, WBC, WBO. She defends her title. She's 8-1. She gets in with the UK's Savannah Marshall, who is 12-1, coming off that loss last time out to Clarissa Shields almost a year ago now. Obviously over 10 two-minute rounds. I am expecting quite a good fight, actually. Been looking forward to this one, just simply because if this fight would have happened before the Shields fight, I would have said Savannah Marshall all day long, probably by stoppage. But I think the way she lost to Shields I'm just really intrigued to see how she looks, because it was a decisive beating that she took from Shields, and she gets in with Cruz de Zern, who was very, very confident when I spoke to her the other week. She said she's probably going to have a bet on herself, which was quite funny. But I think, I mean, she's extremely confident, and she's probably fighting a little bit of a confidence lacking Savannah Marshall, perhaps. So I think that's going to be quite interesting there, and may the best woman win. Because French on Cruz de Zern's a friend of the show, I'm going to have to side with her. That's what I do. But all the best to Peter Fury, obviously, in the corner with Savannah. Moving now to the York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. Just one fight over here to mention. Casey Kademi, friend of the show, 8-1 with 2 draws. He fights here for the vacant IBO Continental Super Flyweight title over 10 rounds against Ben Norman, who is 7-2. Moving now to the Sheffield Arena, Sheffield, Yorkshire, United Kingdom, and Eddie Hearn show, Matt Drum Boxing. It's going to be live on the Zone. Let's start with this undercard over here. Where should we go? A fight here for the vacant English lightweight title. We're going to see the undefeated Lewis Sylvester, 11-0 in a 10-rounder against Adam Cope, who's 7-0. Somebody's own must go there. Moving up the card once again, Hopi Price, 10-0 in a 10-rounder here against James Beats Jr., who is 15-4. That's a good step up, actually, for Hopi Price. I feel like Hopi Price fought not long ago. It's been 4 months since he fought, actually. Okay, interesting. But yeah, he gets in with James Beach, who obviously is a bit of a tried and tested guy around the domestic scene. He's coming off a loss last time out, was stopped by Nathaniel Collins. But yeah, I remember being at his fight when he lost to Dennis McCann, and I bet, it was a crazy bet. I had a 300-1 accumulator that Dennis McCann needed to do was win on points, and he knocked him out in round 8, and I was devastated. So, I remember losing a 300-1 accumulator because of that. But anyways, James Beach is relatively tough. Been stopped twice in his 4 losses. Obviously took a points loss to Chris Bork and Brad Foster. But he's generally quite a tough guy, even though his last 2 losses have both come by a knockout. He did, in between those 2 losses, manage to pick up a points win against Raza Hamza. So that was quite a good win, actually. So Hopi Price, James Beach Jr., it's a 10-rounder. I'd probably say Hopi Price to win on points, you know. I would not be surprised if he did that on points. Moving up the card once again, we're going to see Pat McCormack. He is currently 4-0. He gets in with Tony Dixon, who's 14-4. Got a points loss to Ted Cheeseman back in 2017. Hasn't really been that active over recent times. Lost to Maxim Prodan. Lost to Mirko Natalizzi. Lost to Paddy Gallagher. Yeah, obviously he's going to win this one quite easy. McCormack probably end up stopping him. However, looked really frustrated in his last fight, because I think he was very fortunate to get that stoppage against Dario Soshi. It was a bit of a soft stoppage in the final round, basically. So I don't know. He was really frustrated there, and it'd be interesting here if Tony Dixon can frustrate him. He seems like he kind of, I don't want to say loses his head, but when he kind of gets a bit desperate at times, Pat McCormack. Maybe he'll learn from that last time out. We'll have to wait and see. And then, yeah, the main event, again, it's set up to be a decent fight. We're going to see Dalton Smith, 14-0. He steps in with Sammy Maxwell, 17-1 over 12 rounds for the British and Commonwealth super lightweight titles. Massively favouring Dalton Smith here. He is the betting favourite as well. I'm expecting him to look quite good here. I don't rate Maxwell that highly, and I think it goes back to that time when he fought that journeyman, and I think his name was Sabri Sediri. He was getting beaten, obviously, dropped a couple of times, and then came back when the guy was showboating. I say the guy was a journeyman, he was 10-0, but anyway, he shouldn't have been able to cause as many problems to Maxwell as he did. And ever since then, there's been a little bit of a question mark over Maxwell. He's come back, he got a very, very, very dubious points win against Akeem Ennis Brown. I was at that fight. After that, he got knocked out against Alejandro Meneses. And come back last time out beating Sean Cooper. I think Dalton Smith is too solid, too well put together, and I think Dalton Smith will probably stop Sammy Maxwell. I don't think we're going to see that go 12 rounds. Moving now to the Huntington Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA. This one is on ESPN. I'm going to come to you for the main event, Eddie, because you haven't really done any talking apart from saying, yay, we made you all money if you followed that little Cusimano bet. But yeah, we'll come to you in just a second. But yeah, on this undercard out here, we're going to see prospect Jahi Tucker, 10-0 with 5 KOs. He gets in with Nicholas Fiaz, Nicholas Flaz, who's 10-2. And yeah, moving up the card to the more bigger fights, we're going to see Arslanbek Makhmudov, 16-0. He obviously looked horrendous against Carlos Takam, definitely lost that fight, and he come back after that, beat Michael Wallace in just one round, so we didn't really see enough of him there. And then yeah, gets in now with this guy here, Rafael Akpejiori, who is 15-0 with 14 KOs. So both men can bang here. Like I say, Makhmudov 16-0 with 15 KOs. I don't know much about this guy here, to be honest with you, Akpejiori. I wish you did, Eddie, but I'm guessing you probably don't. 32 years of age, from Nigeria, based in Miami, Florida, 6'8". I'm just looking through his resume here, but again, really poor opposition. The only name I actually recognize is the heavyweight journeyman Terrell Jamal Woods. He was able to beat him unanimously over 8 rounds, and Woods don't really get knocked out often, so that's what you'd expect to see. But other than that, I don't recognize any of the names, and he gets in with Makhmudov. I will say one thing, it's definitely not going to be going 10 rounds that it's scheduled for, but I think Makhmudov is certainly a hell of a lot more vulnerable than I ever thought he was, and Takam definitely beat him, and if you can take his shots early on, I think he slowly falls apart as the fight goes on, but this guy here is a banger as well, so I'm guessing both guys are just going to try to take each other's heads off. And the main event, Eddie, I'm going to come to you now. It's a real shame that we didn't see the original opponent. But yeah, the home fighter at home, Jared Big Baby Anderson, or the real Big Baby Anderson, 14-0, friend of the show. It's over 10 rounds. He was supposed to get in with Zan Kosobutski, but due to visa issues, he couldn't come to the fight. And that was a real shame, because that would have been brilliant. And yeah, he gets in with his late replacement, former IBF heavyweight world champion Charles Martin, 29-3 with a draw. Will he walk the earth like a god, Eddie? You tell me.
Well, if you're talking about Charles Martin, no disrespect, but I don't think so. I think the real Big Baby is going to rock him to sleep, possibly. yeah, you know, it's just Charles Martin, you know, even though he's won a title, you know what I mean? I don't like to, you know, talk about people as if they don't deserve the situation if they've gotten there, regardless of how they did. But, you know, he got a favorable situation. And sometimes, you know, in order to have success like that, sometimes takes a little bit of luck. And that's what happened there. He got, you know, he was fortunate enough to get a certain fight and then basically got the title through that. I don't even know. I don't even know. I can't remember whether he won the title actually in the ring or he won the title by then.
He basically boxed. Do you ever remember the fight? He was with Main Event, yeah. I think. Vyacheslav Glazkov.
Yeah. I remember the fight. I was there.
Yeah. No, he won it in the ring because Glazkov injured his right knee and that was it. He got TKO'd because he couldn't continue. So, you know, it wasn't like Charles Martin actually knocked him out, but he lost because he couldn't continue.
Because he couldn't continue, right? I was there. I was actually at the fight. I even have it on my Instagram, different interviews I was doing at the time. But it's just, you know, so it's hard to say. And then he lost it, obviously, you know, with Anthony Joshua that went in the first round. So it kind of makes it look like,
Second round.
Second round. So it kind of looks like, you know, maybe he was one of those things where, you know, yeah, it's kind of almost like the Stavern situation, you know, where he won the title and, you know, fighting the same guy or whatever. It's just, you know, it makes you wonder. But in this situation, you know, this kid is just a little bit, he's too real. At this point, I mean, what it's looking like with him is that he's a serious contender. Now, And we've seen stranger things happen where, you know, a guy that seems like a can't miss guy who's going to be doing this and that, been endorsed by, you know, other champions and guys he's been in the ring with sparring wise, like, you know, Tyson Fury, namely. And then all of a sudden something happens and they end up getting put out, you know what I mean, or end up losing. So that can happen. Charles Martin, obviously, is a big puncher with a lot of experience. He's been around for a while, so it's not impossible, but very unlikely. It's not probable. This, what's probably going to happen is he's probably going to end up getting stopped, you know, mid rounds, I would say. I don't think it's going to go any, I don't think it's going to go later. You know what I mean? His experience level is noted, but I just don't know that. Regardless of the experience, his ability might be where the issues lie here. You know what I mean? It's an opportunity for, you know, for Charles Martin to get back in, you know, in front of fans again and maybe fight a bigger fight if he was to win. I just don't think he's going to. And that's no disrespect to him. It's just the circumstances, you know, time. You know, Father Time is undefeated. And he, to be quite honest, was, even though he's a championship-level guy, regardless of how he got it, he wasn't the super elite of the elite. I'm not saying that he wasn't a good fighter. He was absolutely a good fighter, but it's just that when you now match him up at, you know, a little older, you know what I mean, a little more wear and tear, like he was in the big fight with King Kong Ortiz not too long ago and didn't come out on the other side of that well. So, I mean, we don't know, you know, we don't know. But I think, honestly, I think the real big baby will end up stopping him probably mid rounds. I would say it won't go past 5 or 6. You know, maybe we might want to bet that, but we'll see. We'll see. But I'm looking for Anderson to go in and stop him mid rounds.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I think. I think we're going to see a stoppage in the first half. I'm not entirely sure the odds are going to be great on that. I'm guessing the bookies probably expect that to happen. But yeah, we know how he won the title. We saw the Joshua fight. One thing that I will say about that Joshua fight, actually, I was in the arena the night that he boxed Anthony Joshua, and I left during the undercard fights. So I could have stayed and watched that main event, but I actually left. Because everyone I was with got kicked out apart from me, and I thought, oh man, I don't want to be here on my own, so I left as well. But anyways, I remember racing home to see the main event, and obviously I watched it indoors. Yeah, you know, after that fight, he ended up losing to Adam Kownacki, who we touched on obviously in the first half of the show. And then, yeah, come back from there, obviously beat Gerald Washington, got in with Luis Ortiz in that fight you mentioned, which still, it was such a weird, weird fight when I remember it. You know, had Ortiz down in round one, had him down in round four, was comfortably winning the fight on all scorecards, then all of a sudden gets put down twice in round six, and it all just came to an abrupt end. It was such a, like, that sixth round turn the fight on its head out of nowhere, and it just all come to an end so quickly. I remember being baffled of what had actually happened in that sixth round. And then, yeah, since then, got a quick and easy win against Devin Vargas, and then here he goes. He gets a shot against Jared Anderson, hasn't had loads of notice for it either. So yeah, I'm expecting Jared Big Baby Anderson to get the stoppage within rounds 1 to 6. And Jared Anderson, that is pretty much what he does. Let's be honest here. 14-0, 14 KOs. Furthest he's been is 6 rounds, and that was only once. Other than that, it's been round 1-1-1, 3-1, 4-1, that sixth round, like I just said. And then since then, round 2-2-2-2-2 and 3. So yeah, it looks like he will get the stoppage early, as he does. All the best to both guys. Like I say, both guys friends of the show. And hopefully it's a good one while it lasts. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 402 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning WBO, WBC and IBF female super welterweight world champion, Miss Natasha Jonas. All the very best to her this weekend. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall I'll see you all again next week.